I guess first thing, just to approve the agenda, we have do some introductions, because we have so many folks. Chris and Philip are going to do the LID presentation, which we should follow immediately by the LID statement, though, which would be fun. And then talk about the sustainability plan and updates on that. Y'all should have gotten the annual report from the staff over there. Check in on that. Pass those around if you need to. And then Christine has some updates on some of the environmental programs and announcements. Does this agenda sound good to everybody? So yeah, start with introductions. So I am Andy Myers. I work for an organization that uses documentaries to promote environmental awareness. I studied environmental studies when I was in college. Yeah, mostly we want clean water and air. That's my motto.
Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Stephanie. This is my first meeting, new, and I work for an environmental compliance company, and I'm excited to join.
Hello, Michael Savage, formerly of Lockheed Martin. I retired from them 4 years ago, spent about 40 years in some form or fashion of environment safety and health, anywhere from the U.S. Antarctic program up to Alaska. So.
I'm Lucy Butler. I'm a retired speech-language pathologist, uniquely unqualified to be on this committee, but I do enjoy learning from everybody. But I've been very interested in environmental issues since forever.
I'm Rebecca McCall, and I am your county commissioner liaison.
Shane Lauder. Currently work with Beverly Hanks and Associates, commercial and residential. Have a background in construction for 25 years, native here in Henderson County.
I'm not on the committee, but my name is Philip Ellis. I'm a past committee member, and me and Chris Gross, another guy who's not here, are giving this presentation. It's not a formal thing. We're just talking about something on the agenda.
Hey, I'm Christine, Environmental Programs Coordinator and County Liaison for the EAC. So if you have need anything, just email me. And if you want to add anything to the agenda, email me and maybe copy Andy on it, and I'll get it on there.
I'm John Harrison. My first meeting was last time, and I'm a retired chemical engineer and environmental engineer. I worked 4 years as a chemical engineer in industry, mainly in research, and worked 15 years as an environmental engineer, mainly dealing with air quality, in a had a house here in Hendersonville for 12 years. I moved up here from Georgia.
People usually don't move up; they usually move down.
Well, I'm the mountain.
I'm Grady Nance. Retired for 7 years from Detroit Edison, and I've spent my career doing energy stuff and business stuff. The last job was doing the renewable energy program for Detroit Edison Solar and Wind Farms.
Stephen Tiltson, I'm a park ranger. Chimney Rock, I've been there about 6 years living in the county, and a certified environmental educator.
So, cool. Welcome, everybody. So next thing is the LID presentation. Philip, are you okay to start that?
Yep, I got a text from Chris. He's going to be here in about 15 minutes. We could wait on him if you want to rearrange the agenda, yeah. Or I could start.
Why don't we do that? That's cool with you, Christine.
Yeah.
Jump to the sustainability updates.
Yeah, so I emailed the Southeastern Sustainability Directors Network, and I'm working in the process to become a member, and through that they'll give us support from across the Southeast, and I'll be able to network with other environmental programs or sustainability coordinators across the Southeast, and I really feel like this organization will help us develop a sustainability plan, and they also give out grants, which is something that I want to maybe apply for. First, develop that relationship, and then apply for a grant to bring in a consultant for the sustainability plan, because it is call it, I guess, a beast. Like, you know, it's a daunting task, but I definitely want it to be done. But I think if we had maybe some funding behind that, maybe secured through a grant, then I think that will really be great for the whole process. So I'm still waiting to hear back from them. And then the awards, I've been trying to get a hold of assistant county manager, Amy, but I will admit September beat me up a little bit. It's been crazy, so I still need to talk to her about maybe her thoughts behind the awards. So it's kind of, but I think October is lightened up a little bit, so I think we'll be able to, I'll be able to get a meeting with her, and she can kind of help direct me in the best way to maybe approach the commissioners. But we do have Rebecca here, and maybe we could talk a little bit about what we wanted to do. Do you want to, I could share it, or Andy?
Yeah, just the short context is we talked about doing some sort of an environmental award for residents in Anderson County. We may have talked, I'm not remembering if we decided it would be just for county employees at first, potentially, or if it would be open to all. But the idea is essentially to nominate someone maybe four times a year or less frequently that is doing something notable for the environment. And we had developed some criteria last time to try to make it a fair process for nominations. I think that's all in terms of the project. But did you want to talk about the data manager, kind of your manager, who would potentially be the first nominee?
Yeah, and I think we first need to get the criteria down on who we want to nominate. But there is someone that we have in mind, or I guess the committee does, is that cafeteria manager who takes time out of her day to collect the cans from the lunch and then recycle them and then get money to fund school lunches for kids in need. So that is a Henderson County employee that is helping the environment, but it's outside of her normal job description. So I think that's kind of what we're thinking about too, is like outside of their normal job description. Like, although I would be honored, I wouldn't be nominated because it's my job, you know. But someone that maybe a teacher or a librarian or maybe a county employee that is just kind of going above and beyond for the environment.
I don't know. Why do you want to restrict it to the county employees?
I'm not sure if that was decided. I can't remember.
I was curious about the commissioners, because we do need to get board approval for this, and if this is something y'all want. But, I mean, do you think the board would be open to county employees only, or open to them all?
I think I personally would both be open to anybody, but what type of award are you considering?
I think it would just be like a certificate.
Because monetary awards get sticky.
Yeah. Yes, no, just I think like a certificate that I can print off.
Yes, recognition.
Yeah, which is budget neutral.
Yeah.
So, but just a certificate and maybe a letter, and
might
then
spring for a frame, you know.
Yeah, I know, right? They're a dollar at the dollar store. But just being recognized at a board meeting.
Right.
I think that would be
right.
The biggest thing is just to honor them publicly at a board meeting.
I think our thinking was that we would start out with, like, county employees because we were afraid of businesses and other agencies competing for the award. I mean, that was the thinking from what I remembered from the meeting. We thought maybe starting out with county and then expanding it, you know.
Four times a year could get cumbersome. Maybe have four awards, but just do it once a year or something as far as at the board meetings. But that's something to think through. Agendas get awfully filled up.
Right. Is there anything like this in existence for employees or countywide right now that's even recognized by the government?
I'm sure there is. I can't think of what it is off the top of my head, but Amy would certainly know. Or Janice. And Janice is big on awards. I would pull her into it.
Okay. That's a good suggestion.
Even though she's HR, she has some ideas.
Christine, what do we need? Oh, sorry, go ahead, John.
Did we talk about having something in the newspaper? I mean, it's sort of to promote the work we do.
Submitting people?
Well, just when you get the
award. Have the recognition of the award.
Oh, yeah.
A little article in the paper about it.
Yeah, I think we mentioned I can submit a press release, too, with that. And,
yeah, we do that a lot.
And they'll pick it up, most likely.
And that's almost more, to me, it's more important than having a presentation.
Exactly.
And these also go in their HR files, too.
Right.
So
yeah.
That's
certainly
that kind of recognition.
And that'd be something at the school. You know, some kind of
I mean, I off the top of my head know of an employee over at the health department that has gone out and actually looked at the drainage around that field that we use for overflow parking that isn't yet paved, and has considered how we could, you know, move the waters, you know, just does all that on their own time, you know, and that's not even their forte, but is interested in it enough to go and do that. So.
Well, Christine, is there anything else we need to decide before you reach out to Amy and Janice?
No, I think maybe we just need to get together and write a letter. But my guess is maybe we can write a letter explaining this award to the commissioners and, I guess, to the chair, and it can be voted on at a meeting.
Yeah.
But I think maybe we could all agree, maybe we could work together about the letter, the committee approve the letter, and then we can submit it, and I would maybe get on the agenda. I'm assuming this needs to be on the agenda.
Yeah, it's probably on the consent agenda, and probably for October 16th.
Okay. Is everyone in favor of that? Right?
Do you think it would need discussion, or no? Okay.
Not if we have the information ahead of time,
yeah.
Then we can all review the information and... that's what usually happens on the consent agenda.
Okay, perfect.
As long as there's no monetary value to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you, find a way to send you some awards criteria we use when we drafted it for our division.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
That's
cool.
It kind of frameworks the verbiage outside of your normal job duties that type of thing.
Awesome.
Might be helpful.
Yeah.
Reorient this? This seems
necessary. Can't escape it, Stephanie. Cool. And then maybe too, Christine, for folks who are new, can you give us just a status of the sustainability plan, like where it is now?
Yeah, so it's still not much work has been done.
Okay.
And I hate to report that, but I think we'll get there eventually. Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Next order of business is the annual report, which Christine has printed out. Essentially, this is something we have to do every year that just basically summarizes what took place during our meetings over the last fiscal year. So this takes place from November 2018 through May of 2019. I guess we do need to approve this before it is sent. I don't know if folks want to take time to read it now or if we should just take these home with us and do it over email. We are waiting for Chris, so we have time if people want to read it now. Or we could jump right down to the environmental programs. Seems like people are already reading, so maybe we take a couple minutes.
Dies in my memory.
It was a lot to try to remember from a year ago. So,
did you listen to all the
some
news?
Of them? Some of it I did remember pretty well. Taking much better notes this time.
Gracious, this is really good. This is really good. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Has everybody had a chance to look through it? I don't want to shame any slow readers.
I'd like to make a motion to accept it.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Cool. All right. Well, that is approved. One thing that I wanted to bring up, because I read Ryan's from last year, which was a really amazing template. Since we have a lot of new folks, I thought I would bring this up, because what y'all had done a year prior when Ryan was chair was at the start of the fiscal year, folks discussed issues that were important to them and topics that were of interest, and then the committee kind of divided and conquered based on what they were interested in and based on what knowledge they had, which led to this LID statement and the presentation that's going to take place today. And even though we're not at the start of a fiscal year, I don't think, since we have so many new folks, I wondered if maybe next meeting we could have a similar conversation. Maybe not today, since we do have the presentation, but I'm just wondering if that would be a good idea, just to see where we all are, what we're interested in, and figure out what to tackle. That sounds good.
Just and while you're thinking, think about Acosta Trail.
Acosta Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a lot of progress on greenways.
Yeah.
Big news right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Maybe we could get someone to present about it, too.
Yeah.
Because didn't Conserving Carolina... bring them in too.
Hmm.
I would just think lots of opportunities along
the to celebrate.
Christine, I would tell you, Conserving Carolina is going to present to the Transportation Advisory Committee next month. So maybe I'll just get Jana to send an invite out. Since it's an open public meeting, it might be a good opportunity if you want to just come listen to it.
I think that'd be great.
Do you have the date for that?
The third Wednesday is the same day as the
Wednesday. At 4 o'clock.
It's the 16th. I know that day.
Actually, this is in November. They don't have an option.
Oh, okay.
So it's November the 20th, so it's the week before Thanksgiving.
November 20th. And that's a Wednesday at 4 p.m.?
Mm-hmm, 4 o'clock.
Awesome. Well, Christine, did you want to jump into some of the environmental programs announcements?
Yeah. So Monday, we submitted our grants for the VW program. And on the September 3rd board meeting, it was approved for us to apply, so thank you. And there were three applications. One was with the Rescue Squad and Facility Services, and they both applied for the diesel vehicle replacement program, and so they applied to replace a Ford truck for a rescue squad that will be used for towing primarily, and then facility services for like a new boom truck. So we hope that we can get that. They're about $60,000 each about. And then we also applied for the electric vehicle charging station. And hey, Chris.
Hey, sorry.
No, you're good. And that one was a little more complicated. The application was definitely more intense, more involved than just filling out the application. There's a whole work plan needed for that. But it was completed, and we did apply for a solar canopy. And for our knowledge, we are the only suburban Western North Carolina county that applied for one. So I think that's in a priority corridor. So the grant, they want to fund EV stations along this predetermined corridor. It's priority corridor. And so we are on that from I-26, and I think we might have a good shot. We have to be within 5 miles of the interstate. And I forgot to tell you, the location we applied for is for the 95 Courthouse overflow lot. So at the 95 Courthouse, there's like that overflow lot that, you know, it's used some, but I don't think it's always full.
Off Church Street?
No, it's like off 4th and Grove. It's across from the Gray Mill.
Yeah.
Sort of
behind the park.
Yeah, behind the Jackson Park.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I found out that we used to have a drum circle there, right? Is that
what?
A drum circle? Anyway, oh. Off the topic. We applied for that and applied for the solar canopy portion, which I'm excited to have solar connected with EV. So I hope we get that. We find out winter 2019, 2020, I'm guessing January, but I think we have a good shot.
What, is it 100% grant?
Or 100%, yes.
Jeez.
And I probably should have requested a match during that meeting, but I forgot to include that in next time, but I did submit 100%. Mm-hmm. They would fund that. So, and they can come back. They can say we want to fully fund this or we just want to fund a portion. But then if they approach me that way, I'll come back to the commissioners and either just tell them the circumstances. So, but I think we have a good shot. I'm hopeful. And
is this a public use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be public, and we would have a credit card reader and use Green Lots. Have you ever heard of that? It's like a EV network, and you can also have an app where you can just – your credit card is already in there, and you can just plug up and say you're there. Or there's a phone line you can call and charge your car that way. And they also offer 24-hour assistance. Mm-hmm. Which is huge, because I would want them to offer.
How many charging stations in the request?
Two ports, one car at a time. But it's a fast charger, yeah. The DC fast charger, which charges an electric vehicle in 30 minutes, 80% in 30 minutes.
Wow.
So it's quicker than the level twos, which we do have here in the county. I think that was some confusion. It's like some people are like, oh, we already have EV chargers here, but we don't have any DC fast chargers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the confusion.
Yeah.
When do you expect to hear?
Winter, or January 2020. So,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So we're excited about that. Any questions about the VW grant? Cool. And the Dana Elementary, they started composting. Yay! And you might have seen some news articles go out. It got picked up by three different news channels. So. Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. And I think when the schools get good publicity, they're more likely to work with us again for future projects. Mm-hmm. And they went from, on average, 11 trash bags to just one or two during lunch.
Wow.
So I'm very excited about that stat. We did have some hiccups, but we're trying to work through them. And I think we'll know for other schools. So.
And I think the publicity is great. It was on Facebook, too, and I shared it, and there were a lot of people who commented on trying to get it started at their – I mean, these are parents – about getting it started at their schools, and so they're probably going to be approaching their administrations and saying, why can't we do this? So anything that you can share with that, we can all – or you can post that we can share to get the word out. I think it's a good thing, too.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And – I think the nutritionist, she's already been approached by other schools, maybe like just saying they want it next. So,
well, I'm still upset that we're throwing away so much food.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, why serve kids food that they're not going to eat? They're just going to put it in the trash or the compost. So,
yeah.
That's the next level we're going with it.
Yeah, and there have been monitoring some lunches, and some kids eat it, some don't. It's just. But I think they are, you know, looking at the food, and they do have fresh options, but there's a requirement that you need to take a certain amount of fruits and vegetables, right. And so, but.
Some schools are developing a share table, have y'all seen that, where it's out in the cafeteria, and if it's something you're not going to eat, you put it there, and if people want seconds, and kids who are in, you know, who's aren't paid up on their lunch bills, and schools still provide them lunch, but they can't get seconds, and they can go to that share table and eat whatever is put on the share table, and that's something that costs nothing.
People take it home.
You know, I don't know what they would do with it otherwise, but I just know that it's available for kids to go and get seconds and eat more at no charge, and of course that cuts down on food waste, which is the you know the one and. one of the main reasons that we're looking at this. But a simple idea like that, you know, that really suits so many purposes. You're feeding someone who might be hungry, who can't afford to get more food, and then you're cutting down on food waste. But
what school is that?
I don't remember what school it was. I saw it somewhere.
It was approved when I was setting up the summer feeding programs from the school system. They showed us to set it up that way.
Oh, did they? So they are doing that in the schools here?
Good. Well, they did that for the summer feeding, where they'd come to one of the community centers and kids could get lunches during the summer in the school. So the school cafeteria showed us how to set that up.
Yeah.
That was Dana, again, was the one that was cooking our food.
And that's interesting, because I did bring the share table idea to our initial meetings with the school administration. And they, I guess maybe they wanted to start compost, but they're a little nervous about share tables. So I didn't know if share tables needed to come from the top down, if it needed to come from the Department of Public Instruction. I guess they do the standards, but I don't know who... Does the school nutrition do it with the state? But they were nervous about it. But maybe the staff isn't. Maybe
I don't know the code limitations, because the summer lunches were bag lunches, individually wrapped side items, so they could easily just put the whole item or still wrapped.
Well, on the share table, I saw it was all still wrapped. Yeah. It wasn't like that. You put your string beans on there. That's right. And they didn't have, like, apples or fresh fruit or anything, because, I mean, obviously contamination is an issue.
It would be great to look into that. I think food waste has been a recurring topic of interest for members, so maybe...
And it's a huge thing nationally now, you know, in looking at food waste, and it would be good to get involved.
I'll have to try to see what schools those were, if it's similar.
I just remember
counties.
Seeing the picture. But if you Google shared table, you know, for schools, you'd be able to find schools and what their procedure is. And, you know, the thing is, it just has to make sure that it's something that's unopened. Cool. You know.
And South Carolina's Department of Health and Environmental, DHEC, they put out share table information. So it might be more popular in South Carolina than North Carolina,
and you can get Richard Chesney or somebody could get you that information for sure.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it needs to come from our deeks or you know, because it's coming from the state, and so maybe if it has more strength to it, if it's coming from a state entity, then I don't know.
Cutting the school budgets. That's a bear.
Any more questions about the compost program? Cool.
So what school are we going to do next?
I need to sit down and look at the budget, because Solid Waste is sponsoring the program. So I need to talk to Marcus about how many schools can we do each year. I know he wants to keep adding them, but maybe we could...
It might be kind of neat to start it at Edneyville, because they'll be opening up their new school. They're moving into it in December, so to start that fresh in a whole new school environment.
That's a good point.
Just a suggestion.
Yeah. Oh, and some exciting news. The nutritionist at Henderson County Public Schools, she's getting real forks. So they're using plastic forks right now. So yay. And compostable trays. Lunch trays. So something that I've learned is schools always need to have a backup disposable tray, and it's usually styrofoam. Like the dishwasher might go out, there's an employee that's sick. Sometimes they cannot run the dishwasher, so they have to have a backup. And they're getting compostable trays.
Wow,
yay!
That's wonderful.
I'm really excited about forks and trays. So.
Forks
and trays. Yeah, but I'm really glad this compost program helps spark that too. I didn't, you know, tell her anything. I didn't tell her what to do or anything, but she's just like, oh, well, we're composting now. Let's reduce the amount of plastic that's going in and get compostable trays. So really, really happy about that. And then the Deeks grant to build a type 3 compost facility pilot. I'm still following up with the state for our compost pilot application. I went to Compost School through the North Carolina Compost Council. It was a week-long training in Raleigh, so you learn how to operate and a large compost facility. And I met her there, but I emailed her again this week, like, hey, can we go ahead and get permission to start this? So just waiting on that. But once we get approval, we'll hopefully start construction just for a concrete mixing pad to mix the food and the mulch.
Can you clarify what a type 3 compost facility
is? Yeah, so there's type 1 through 4. We already have a type 1 permitted, and that is just for yard waste, yard trimmings. And type 2 is yard trimmings and pre-consumer waste, so from the kitchen. And then type 3 is pre-consumer, post-consumer, and yard trimmings. And then type 4, which I didn't even know this existed, was biosolids from a wastewater treatment plant. Mm-hmm. So those are actually a big business. And I didn't know you could even do grease traps as well. Mm-hmm. So you can compost anything organic. Yeah. But I do not want to get into the biosolids business, just food waste. And we did have, in the month of August, 3 tons was brought to the convenience center of food waste at the food drop-off center. So it's just continued to go up. Mm. So I'm really glad that program is going strong and our citizens want to use it. So. Spread the word if people don't. Do y'all know about the drop-off? So at the convenience center, we have 6, sometimes blue, sometimes green, but they're compost bins where you can drop off your food waste there. And it's a large-scale type 3 compost facility, so you can do meat, bones, dairy, anything that was once living, you can compost it. And we recommend you can keep your food scraps in a brown paper bag and then just drop the whole thing in there. So no plastic bags and no metal. Wow. So, but it's been, people love it, and like greasy pizza boxes that you can't recycle. There's a ton of pizza boxes and it's been pretty low.
You can put those in there?
Mm-hmm. And so it's nice when you drop off your bottles and cans, drop off your food waste. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any other drop off food waste site in the area. There's some in Wake County. I think Chatham County has them, but I think we're one of the only ones in Western North Carolina. Wow. So,
Buncombe County doesn't have them?
I don't think they do.
Amazing.
Yeah. I know there might be some pressure put on them, especially at the transfer station that they have there. It's a pretty, convenient location.
Hmm.
But
what eventually happens to that?
It goes to the same company that we use for the lunchroom pilot, so Atlas. Yeah.
And they mix it in bulk.
Mm-hmm. And then it is composted within like 60 days. And so they use a expanded aerated static pile, and they mix the food with the yard waste, and they put it on, make a pile, and underneath the pile are these pipes, HDPE pipes with holes in it. And they just put a blower into the pipes and force air through it. So you don't have to turn it, and that's how they get the oxygen, just forced air. And then it has to stay 131 degrees for at least 3 days to make sure that it kills off all the pathogens.
And then what happens?
And then they screen it and sell it. Okay. So it's a pretty good business model.
But it's yard mulch or agriculture?
Mm-hmm. People buy it for their fields, for their yards, for farms, potting mixture.
Yeah, okay.
But something I learned at compost school is we really need to figure out what we want to do at our site. What's the end use for it?
Right.
So we make sure we're creating compost for that end use. Yeah. So compost varies. Any questions about
is
the
access to the drop-off, is that obvious on our website?
Yeah, I think so, but I would love to get any feedback on y'all's website, on our website, and especially where environmental programs is. And so I've been thinking about taking that tab away, but and just having solid waste and energy. But But it's on the recycling webpage, which I think is really good, but let me know if it's not obvious.
And once people are at the area, I know there's...
there's signs there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is a good sign.
They'd get to be there, yeah.
Cool. And I might just switch to the Solid Waste Master Plan, just because that kind of has to do with the compost site. We did meet with McGill, and they're working on the Solid Waste Master Plan, and that should be ready hopefully in December or January, and then we'll send this to the EAC to review. And then I think we need to have public comment on it. So that's coming down the line, is the Solid Waste Master Plan, which after we get that done, we'll definitely know where to put the compost facility. So we're not going to build the facility until we get the Solid Waste Master Plan done first. So it's like the thing that's holding up the compost facility is the pilot application and the master plan. So when we both have those two in place, we'll be good to go. And then the Apple Festival, thank you all for coming and helping sort the waste stations. And we collected almost a ton of compost there, which is, I think, 400 pounds more than last year, which is great. But we still had about 10 tons of garbage from the Apple Festival, and about 2.8 tons of recycling, which is great. So about a quarter of that was diverted from the landfill, but there's still room to grow for the Apple Festival and making it more sustainable. But I think my main goal for next Apple Festival is to get more volunteers to help with the waste stations so we can expand them outside of the food court. But, yeah. Any questions about what I've been up to? All right.
Cool. Are y'all ready to present?
Yes.
Cool.
Y'all.
We waited for you.
I didn't want to miss what he was going to say. Background. The LID policy guidance memorandum that was emailed, that was the original version. Chan Allen did some copy editing on it, so I have a more up-to-date version here that I'll pass around. If you read it once, you got the whole thing. This just kind of makes it a little more clear, according to Jan. And so this presentation, it's not so much zoomed into that. I feel like that stands on its own. But what I'm going to talk about over just a few slides here is what, why we would do this. I mentioned urban stream syndrome and hydromodification in here. So we're just going to look at some pictures and talk about how stormwater creates these problems, of which the low-impact development style of building would help mitigate. So these pictures are all mostly from around Hendersonville, and you'll see here that there's a stream in that kind of bottom right area and an eroded bank with cars sitting right on top of it. That's much different than what you would see out, you know, upstream of Mills River or just in the forest somewhere. In a forested setting, you would expect to see the bank sitting much lower. You would have a predictable type of sediment and, you know, cobbles, and the structure of the stream is something that's there and has been there for a long time, and it is in concert. the shape of the stream is in concert with the water that flows off of it, and that's what you get. And the plants are all stable, and everything is in the morphology of the system is not rapidly changing. And in contrast, in these urban settings, we have a lot of rapid change. So this is also near downtown, and you'll see that bank's eroding. There's a bridge in the background. So what's happening is there's increased flows, and it's causing stuff to erode, and you've got a kind of a control structure with that bridge downstream, so you know it can't really go any deeper, so it's going wider, and in general it's degraded the environment in and around that stream. So Chris and I are really familiar with these kind of cartoon diagrams of the water cycle. You know, water evaporates either from the ocean or lakes or through evapotranspiration of leaves and stuff, goes into clouds, falls down, and makes its way through the surface, through the soil, into, you know, back down from whence it came. If you zoom in to a landscape scale, in general, these numbers are just general numbers for comparison on the next few slides, but you'll have only about 10% of the rainfall throughout the year runs off. The rest goes into the soil or just evapotranspires either directly off the leaf or through the leaf as part of that energy expenditure. So you come into a forested setting. You build roads and houses, you have impervious surfaces, and you change the landscape in a way that it changes the way that cycle works. So now when you have a kind of a built-up environment, you have much more runoff, less evapotranspiration, and less infiltration into the shallow and deep groundwater systems. So this, like, just that general idea is what is creating the hydromodification, the urban stream syndrome that we see with those eroding banks and environmental degradation in our streams. What that looks like from an engineer's point of view is just a hydrograph of a given river. So that little blip on the bottom would be for a rain event that happens in the forest before anything's developed. It rains for a long time, and it takes a while for it to even blip up, and then it takes a long time to drain off. Alternatively, after something's been developed through a lot of impervious surface and speeding up the water to get to that particular point in the drainage network, you'll see a much higher flow. It gets there quicker. A lot more runs off. So this hydromodification, it disrupts and alters the stormwater runoff, increases the volume, increases the intensity, and everything happens a lot faster. So we'll just look at this one more time. I feel like I've never spent enough time on these graphs because I also see these a lot. But the one of the big pictures here is all the area under the tall graph. Like, that whole area represents a volume of water that previously didn't exist on our landscape. So that's for the same rain event. You know, we just kind of model it and make a simulation of what would happen for some developed landscape, and that's just typical of urban and suburban development patterns.
The layman's terms, you usually hear people describe the urban watersheds as flashy. That's what everybody's heard, that word flashy, meaning that it comes up really fast and really high, and then is gone. But, I mean, that's typically how you will hear in non-engineering terms.
What's the measurement of flow? What's the CFS?
That's cubic feet per second.
Yeah.
It's just a way to measure. It's like gallons per minute. It's a volume over a certain amount of time. That's how you would measure discharge of something. Through any area, if you have more discharge, it's obviously going to be higher. So a flood is the stage and the discharge, that flow, they're kind of synonymous. Higher means more flooding. Or
I just wanted to know what the measurement was.
More power.
Yeah, cubic feet per second.
Okay, so.
The reason you had that big peak is because you had you're seeing the same amount of rain.
Same amount of rain.
And so reason that peak is because it didn't absorb into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Upstream, right. Before,
yeah.
It got into the creek.
So the difference is.
So it all got in the creek, that's why it went up.
Exactly.
Point at things.
You give it, you just to say it's a 2-inch rain event.
This, then it did it quicker. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's this condition,
yeah,
compared to
that
condition.
Right. Put it up for a second.
So it's 50% as opposed to 15%.
Yeah. So it starts raining right here. They had to endure, yeah, it before. It starts raining right. This is a measurement in the stream.
Right,
okay?
Yeah.
So it starts raining,
starts raining. This is water running off, being infiltrated, soaking
in the ground,
being absorbed, doing anything. The stream hasn't done anything, and then all of a sudden, all that water makes it to the stream, peaks up, and comes down.
Right.
Same thing here, except now you've got an impervious surface. You can see it's coming up. It's getting there faster than that peak. When it does get into the stream, it's much higher and much. And it's hard to tell in this one because it's a long time frame, but it's generally much quicker to get in there.
I actually saw that happen this week, but the peak was like way up there. I mean, it happened within minutes.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to any USGS gate, you'll see that's what they look like. It's just a series of these, and those are just random ones.
Yeah. So, you know, my kind of stake in this, it's kind of obviously what Chris and I do this kind of work for a living, but I'm also, I live in this area because I do a lot of kayaking. I paddle a lot on Mud Creek a good bit, so I feel like I'm intimately aware and familiar with the hydro modification, the urban stream syndrome in Henderson County. And I'm just going to share a few pictures. This is just from this past year. That's on Mud Creek, and you'll notice the water, instead of being clear, it's pretty cloudy, turbid. It's got some fine sediment in it.
Have you ever seen it clear?
I often see it clear.
Really? Okay.
If we go a few days, several days without rain.
Actually, this past couple of weeks.
Yeah. Actually, last week I paddled Mud Creek downstream. I was in the vicinity of Berkeley Mills Park.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever, I saw 3 otter.
Wow.
Well, it scared me really bad, actually, because it was like one of them was swimming at
you. You were in your kayak.
Their heads,
right?
Yeah, I was in my kayak, and their heads, like, they poke out of the water, and it looks like a little dog coming to you. And it popped down, and then I looked over, and there were a couple of them swimming underwater next to me.
Wow.
Better than a gator.
Yeah. Well, the point of this slide was that it's this. So I took this picture after a very small rain event.
Mm-hmm.
So, in contrast, I'll go paddle up in the Smoky Mountain National Park. I can go up there after 2 inches of rain, and the river's still clear.
Right. Yeah.
Here, we have, you know, several issues that create this condition, and that was less than half an inch of rain, and it was like 12 hours after the rain. So it was kind of remarkable, and I was like, you know, because a few days before, it had been mostly clear. And that sediment comes from bank erosion, mostly. I would hazard to guess that it comes from bank erosion. This is from on Mud Creek, somewhere around the Ocala Greenway, and it's just a big gouge in the riverbank. That's looking straight at the riverbank. You know, the surrounding area is like 8 feet tall, and that's just a big gouge where a tree had just kind of fallen in and it eroded around it. And like I said, in contrast, in our national forest and the Smoky Mountain National Park, this is what you would see, you know, a defined structure in a channel. I mentioned before, you know, we can, based on the slope and the amount of water draining to a particular channel, it's pretty predictable what features form. That picture on the left, you can see, is kind of these recurring steps that happen in a, kind of has a cadence to it. And depending on the slope of the channel and what it's made of, boulders or bedrock, it's a predictable thing. The problem with hydromodification is the component that changes is the runoff. So we showed you those graphs and we showed you how much it increases. When that flashiness comes into the channel, what was there previously cannot hold those flows any longer, and they wash away. And like I also said earlier, how that stream, that channel had a road on the downstream side. So it literally just has eaten, that channel has eaten deeper and deeper all the way to that elevation. So it could eat no more and now just going side to side. So that structure that was there, the ecology that's formed around that structure no longer exists, and we're left with the degraded environment. One of the biggest problems and the thing that's hard to have a conversation about this is you would say, all right, that's the new condition of Hendersonville or Henderson County. The environment's got to fix itself, which is true. You know, over time, the channel would respond and be able to build itself back and have ecology around the new flow, stormwater runoff coming in. The problem is those effects take a long time for all those dominoes to fall. It's kind of like you've probably heard the phrase geologic time, like the mountains are moving up and you don't really notice them. The point is the rivers coming back to equilibrium takes more than a human's lifespan. It's like hundreds of years. So the stuff that we see today, that's still repercussions from the original settlement of Hendersonville. Mm-hmm. So it's what we're doing now, and you know the new regulations that came in with Phase 2 stormwater that are being implemented over the past 20 years. We're not going to see the effects of those for the end or after our lifetimes.
And as these things adjust, they tend to take out human infrastructure and property and things along with them. Just like in the first slide where it was up against the parking lot, that stream's adjusting. And if it was in the middle of a field, no one would maybe be that concerned about it. But it's taking out their parking lot, it's threatening safety, all kinds of other issues.
Yeah, okay, so the typical way, what is the point of this LID policy guidance statement? There are typical ways to design a site, and this is oriented at Henderson County capital improvements. Big sites like the Tommy Thompson facility on Asheville Highway. I drive by there every day. I see that pond out front. That's just what do you want to call it? Like it's tried and true civil engineering. It goes into a grate, goes into a pipe, goes into a pond. It's kind of designed to the bottom. That's kind of a derogatory way to put it, because you could say it's the most efficient way to meet the standard that is in the ordinance that's, trickled down from the EPA, and everyone's required to, do a little bit to help these types of problems in our streams and to keep from flooding our neighbors and stuff. But it can only go so far. We've got too much water going too fast, and it's also polluted. The idea behind low-impact development approach is that it would mimic the natural hydrology that was already existing on that site, previous to any development. You want to slow down the water, spread it out, soak it into the soil.
Well, the interesting thing is that there was development on that site.
Yeah, prior to that.
So what was happening then?
So the point of this is not to develop some new ordinance. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to say, the whole point of this is trying to say, hey, architects, engineers, mm-hmm. the people that the county is hiring to think about this and be creative, do your job. Mm-hmm. That's the point of this. So if I was faced with that site, I wouldn't say, ooh, here, we get to put more water into the creek because there was a parking lot here beforehand. I would say, hang on. Actually, what was here beforehand was a forested hill slope. Mm-hmm. And I would make that be my starting point for design.
Okay.
So the LID approach, it wants to treat stuff close to its source as opposed to getting everything in a pipe and sending it to a pond as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a distributed network of treatment cells. Mm-hmm. So instead of having stuff go directly into a pipe, you use a soft engineering approach with plants.
Historically, stormwater has been handled essentially as, originally it was handled as, get it away from my site as quickly as possible to somewhere else. Okay, so it was direct pipe, and we have a lot of that still goes on because stuff was built before ordinances even existed to address that. So they started sending it, and it would go straight to the streams, right, out of parking lots. And that still exists all over the place. I can show you all kinds of examples. They didn't do anything wrong. That's the way it was done. And a lot of that was for safety. Okay, so then they started to realize that that was a bad idea. So the next thing to do come along was, well, you can't send all that to the stream immediately. You have to have some sort of way to hold it, so that all that doesn't rush in there. Hence the gigantic retention basins that are now all over the place, which is what's in front of the Tommy Thompson. It's also, you can point to them anywhere. There's the Ingalls, Walmart, any new development.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who it is, but that is the easiest, cheapest, tried and true kind of traditional way to achieve those
mosquito
goals.
Mosquito collection.
Well, yeah, but to achieve those goals. So that was sort of that. This is kind of the next step beyond that. Sorry, I didn't
jump in. How does DOT work into this? Because I have an example of where they have done some repaving and put a culvert in to redistribute water coming down a hill and going into a stream, and that stream has now taken away a fourth of a private road because of just what you showed.
Mm-hmm.
So what is their responsibility? No?
So for one, it's hard but possible to define who's exactly at fault there.
Mm-hmm.
So the NCDOT made a change, but what percentage of what has happened actually is?
I mean, what is their responsibility as far as moving the water? Do you know? How? I know they're supposed to distribute the water to the closest point where it can naturally flow, but how far do they follow it? How far are they responsible for? Do you know? I'm just asking.
In general, you can't direct water onto someone else's property and cause damage.
Right.
It's hydraulic trespass. And
I know that's in our county ordinance. I wasn't sure about the state. So.
But presumably, NCDOT generally knows what they're doing, so they probably dissipated it in some way, but it increased the volume of water that's being experienced downstream, potentially.
Yeah.
And is maybe having some of these knock-on effects in the creek,
yeah,
where it's all being brought back together, and that creek is not large enough, doesn't have the geomorphology to handle those increased flows.
Especially with the amount of water we've had.
Yeah.
Didn't want to stop your presentation.
No, I mean, that's about it in terms of, engineering and background information. But just to drive the point home, the LID approach, it envisions a distributed network of treatment as opposed to a single spot, and it uses plants. Notice back on this slide, the picture on the right actually shows stuff happening, chemical reactions and evapotranspiration going up and back into the atmosphere, whereas the hard engineering approach just sends it straight down. So, you know, if we're not, there's a reason that areas that don't have a lot of rainfall look like that. And then there's also a reason why areas that do have a lot of rainfall and are very humid look like that. It's just that's the ecosystems that arise from the environment. Plants can't live without water. Water can't live without plants. And the degradation of any part of that system, it messes up this the food web, the network, the ecosystem surrounding our streams and riparian areas. So, you know, just because the volume of water is increased, doesn't mean that anyone in that picture, anything in that picture, doesn't like that. But if the channel drops, you know, the bottom drops out of it 10 feet, it goes from being cobbles to sand, it messes up the environment for the crawdad or, you know, some other plant that something was eating, that works its way back up, and what you're left with is a barren stream. So that's about it on the background. Chris, did you have anything to add before we move to this document? That is Wash Creek. Wow.
They're doing restoration there now, I understand.
This area, that bank has been restored.
Oh, it has been
a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Where did that money come from, or who, or how did that happen?
That's a private property owner that paid for it, because I have some other pictures I can show, but basically their driveway was about to be washed away. And that's a business. That's like a mm-hmm. health facility, so
yeah,
they had to make sure they had ingress and egress at all times for ambulances and stuff.
Yeah. It's a great example, you know,
yeah,
with the two pictures that you had side by side. It's like looking at Sierra Nevada and the Publix Lake when it rains.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just that we have good examples in this county. And Sierra Nevada, I mean, it's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing to see. But there was unlimited money there.
Certainly.
When they built that place. But it's just such an example, good example of what can be done.
So then we get to this. So that was just all the thinking in mine and Chris's head, and we had kind of different levels of understanding and background information.
That was all the why this matters.
Right.
Really, yeah. Truthfully. And we forget sometimes because we work in it so much.
Yeah, so, and then the idea with this is, this is just this, my personally and Chris's personally, and we bring it to the board to say, we think that we should send this up to the county commissioners, and we think that our capital improvement projects, like the Tommy Thompson schools, stuff that's just always going to be happening, maybe not every year, but you have big projects that just, since I've been here, I just see them happening over and over, that we don't want to design to the bottom, okay? We understand that based on what the EPA and the county's ordinances say, we have to do this. We've got to design to the 2-year and the 25-year. But doing an LID approach is a more holistic way to approach these. It reduces the volume, it does a better job. The distributed network, it adds more water to the soil. It's an engineer. We design things that are very efficient. So if you're giving them a constraint, they meet that constraint in the most efficient way possible. What this is doing is saying, hey, we still want you to meet that constraint. We still want you to follow the ordinance. We're not saying we want you to spend a bunch more money. We don't want this to be more expensive than it has to be, but we want you to use all the tools that you have available. This isn't 1985. You don't have to put it all in a pipe and do it. The state of practice is this stuff that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. It's distributed networks using plants, using native ecosystems to treat our stormwater in part or in full. So that's what this is about.
And then the county is a nicer place to live. And it's prettier.
It is, and it provides an example, right? We have contractors. Those are big. These are the biggest projects in the county. The county pays for them.
Right.
So if we're training the contractors on how to build these bioretention facilities and vegetated swales, then all the little projects that come along that I struggle with, small little 1-acre sites, and I'm trying to do some of these things, no one has the vernacular. Everyone's still doing it based on the 1985 style of stuff. Okay. So the county is being a leader. They're saying, we want you to think about these and try to do some of these other more environmentally friendly approaches to site development, if possible.
It's actually a challenge right now with the Hendersonville High School remodel, restructure, whatever you want to call it, combo. Number one, because a lot of the runoff that's going under the facility now, some of it is clogged up with debris from many years and needs to be cleaned out. Do we bypass that and go a different route around the school, or so it's not, I don't think it's been settled yet.
Yeah, and that's a really good example because that that drainage, I'm pretty sure it all drains to that spot. It goes along North Main.
It's under the football field.
Yeah, it goes under the football field, and it goes
like a crater that just drops.
It goes right in front of Pop's Diner.
Yeah.
And then then it gets into the residential areas, and it's just this channel. It's like, shh.
Yeah, and it's like from 1934 or something crazy like that. It's
Yeah, and whereas previously that probably looks like one of these nice pictures that I showed with just, 1-foot tall banks, and now they're 6-foot tall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question. Do you like gray water ideas, or do you recommend that being added to developments?
Yeah, so I tried to keep this specifically to LID approaches with stormwater.
Okay.
When you say gray water, you mean like reusing roof runoff, or
right.
So that's a method of I do.
Yeah. That's a method of incorporating these concepts into stormwater management.
Right.
So as an example, in Sierra Nevada, they have big cisterns underneath they have the fancy barrels up against the building, but those are the real water capacities underneath the parking lot. There's giant cisterns under the parking lot that they can reuse that water for other things. That's water that doesn't go into the runoff.
Yeah, and it happens several times a year. We just suddenly had the wettest year and a half on record, and then oh, what? Like we have, we're not, we shouldn't water our lawns. We need to. We're in the first stage of a water advisory, whatever that is. If we had these cisterns, you could you'd water the turf or flowers or whatever you had around the around the site.
Quite gray water, you mean people from your showers and your bathtubs and your...
No, it's just roof runoff that they'll collect in a tank, and then you would use that as, like, watering flowers or...
Yeah, I brought a little...
Usually a lot of times when you hear the term gray water, though, you'll hear it in reference to non-potable but safe for human contact type
right.
of water.
Yeah.
So it will be water out of your shower.
Right.
Typically your shower, your washing machine... Those are the two main sources in a residence, you know. So things like
kitchen,
in it, it doesn't say. Have organic waste in it. So toilet water, sinks, kitchen sinks, bathroom sinks are considered gray water.
Yeah.
And the thing with the LID approach,
you would use the gray water for your toilet water.
Yeah, that's, I thought that was what you were talking about.
Yeah.
That's one
yeah.
Right, but that's it's a little different.
So the answer, yeah, in the answer is still yes. It's just like there's issues with all that. Like everything has to be thought through and designed. You can't, So, but it's everything from that tiny scale to at the very beginning site selection. Like, should we do this? Should we redevelop a, you know, a closed down Walmart that's just sitting there and no one's taking care of it? It was built before any stormwater infrastructure was had done anything. Or should we put the new, you know, school we're talking about on this forested site that doesn't have any? Bad environmental effects currently. Like, well, it makes more sense to reuse a site that we could actually make better, as opposed to taking down forest that's actually doing good, doing us well for these problems. Y'all can feel free to look through this book, or you could even borrow it from me for a while. It's a low impact development design manual. And I like this one because it's very easy. It's like for the layman to read. And I was trying to flip to, they had a page that showed just a whole bunch of different types of devices that you can use. So the present thing is inlet, pipe, pond. And then this gives you a whole bunch of other ideas that this is the state of practice, like I'm saying, that should be considered on any site. So everything from the site selection to like the Legos that you're putting together as the designer on the site.
So some common examples around that you may have seen, the parking lot and the fresh market. So those little islands of vegetation that are in there. So instead of being raised up above the parking lot like they traditionally would have been, say at other group, you know, box stores.
Oh, it drains into them.
They're actually lower down in there. So they're below the parking lot. And if you look, there's a drain in there. So those are small bioretention cells that are built into the parking lot. So that's a really common one. A different one is out at
right out of the parking lot.
Yeah, out at Van Wingerden, out on 191. That pond that's out like right up against 191 is actually like a treatment wetland. So the way it's designed is the water actually flows through there through a course, and there's vegetation in there to take up nutrients and pollutants and stuff like that. Most people don't know that, but they think it's just a kind of a pond. But that was actually designed by an engineer to be a stormwater, a treatment wetland. So those are two common ones. There's other ones around, but those are two.
And the pervious surfaces for parking lots?
Yeah, so pervious surfaces, I don't know that much about them other than I have heard that the problem with some pervious surfaces is that after a while they become impervious anyway. So, like, for instance, gravel especially, you know, gravel when you first put it down is a pervious surface, but after you drive on it a certain amount, it becomes essentially
dirt collects
impervious. Yeah, and it compacts down, and then it's more or less like a...
So this is the thing. This is this committee telling our elected representatives to have a consultant think through all this.
Right.
Because every single... We could sit here and go through all of these.
Yeah.
Sand filter, flow devices, underground detentions, dry swales, infiltration trench, riparian buffer, pervious paving.
Yeah.
Like, every one may or may not work for a particular site.
Right. Yeah.
But this is saying, hey, consultants, will you consider these 30 things
yeah.
instead of just a pond? That's the point.
Yeah. And in the state of North Carolina, there is actually a manual, a stormwater design. I don't know what the official title is off the top of my head, but a stormwater manual that has all these in it. So it's not like somebody has to go out and spend hours and hours Googling stuff to find any information on these things. I mean, most of these things with design parameters and everything are in there.
But if they want to collect the same fee for designing it the same way they did in 1996, they can do that to this point.
If there are ordinances that require this, then, I mean, that's what is that what's needed? I mean, you probably know.
So we're not doing anything with the ordinance.
Yeah, this would just go into RFPs and RFQs.
This is just a suggestion. This is us saying, imagine the county saying, we need to build a new school because of stuff that was built out near the airport. They hire consultants, architects, engineers to help them through that process from site selection all the way to school kids going into school. So this would go into some form of that request for help. And those consultants would read it. So not only would we get better proposals of people thinking through what the county needs, but we'd also get better consultants, because that's kind of it's a signal to all these people that presently would not consider working in Henderson County to be, you know, they don't do any state-of-the-art stuff. They're just going to hire local Joe to build the regular old pipe and pond system. It's like, oh, they actually value... They want to do something right out there. This is what we're pushing in.
And I think that's a good point. It sort of encapsulates this. It's a value statement of what we have in this county. And one thing, too, I was thinking, Philip, that could those 30 suggestions or ideas just be listed and placed with it so they don't even have to look anywhere else? Is that a possibility?
But it kind of comes back to, like, the approach we're telling them to take is kind of like it's a set of courses that an engineer, landscape architects, or architects would go
they
through.
They already know
so
that.
It's an approach to design. It's not actually here. Use these Legos.
Right.
So if I hesitate to put those in there, just for that reason, it's like
They're gonna know that anyway. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. They should be able to consult with the staff saying, we looked at this, but it's not appropriate, so we're doing it this way.
Mm-hmm. And because the nomenclature is not completely uniform across different things, mm-hmm. plus the amount of variation and variability you can put into what one person considers a constructed wetland versus another person considers
it's more complicated.
Yeah, the more specific terminology you use, I think the more confusion you're going to end up causing and the more roadblocks.
And the idea with this approach is you can still design it to meet an ordinance, but just by the nature of doing it this way, the end product is going above and beyond what the other approach would give you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
the bare minimum.
And that's what this was today. It's like, okay, all the ordinance and regulations and zoning, everything now is better for these problems. But if you do this approach, which is state of art, state of practice, we go above and beyond that.
So the next step is to get this in front of the Board of Commissioners. Mm-hmm. One note I have is that a lot of this context on the first page I think is really important to include, but this is written to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to change it to go to the Board of Commissioners, and I want to use a lot of the same language, so I think we'd have to rewrite that first page. But
what would the Board of Commissioners
do? You have a copy of that?
They put it in, and they would include it in RFQs and RFPs that are released by the county.
What do those stand for?
Oh, sorry, requests for proposals and requests for quotes.
Qualifications.
Okay, so that would go...
I guess
what I'm getting at is would planning and zoning decisions include this?
I don't know.
Huh?
Would planning and zoning what?
Would that include people, the decision making of planning and zoning include considerations like this?
No.
But that seems like what we need to be after.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a whole different.
That would be
that's a whole different
setting a new regulation.
And that's new ordinances.
We're just asking the
and we
county and its own capital projects to.
That's right.
Expand what they.
I see where your head's going. And I totally get it. We're going to take a bite out of the apple. We're not going to swallow the whole thing.
It's a process.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking that way. Yeah.
This is new to me. Let me see if I understand it. Because I've done some government contract stuff, seen the process. Is we're hoping the commissioners adopt this, so when they request for proposals of a project they're already going to do, they're going to include this in their request, so hopefully some of those
correct
bids
yeah.
and options are going to show them they're doing
yeah.
this, and those, and they're going to mm-hmm. show favor to that, possibly. Those would be
right.
the ones.
Maybe that this
correct.
Gives them a discreet yeah. thing for that it could show up on a selection committee's list. I mean, is it... It's often that you have appendices to requests for proposals, and they're often like just confusing paperwork about woman-owned business and all kinds of stuff. This could just be another appendix that's put on any sort of land development.
It can be that they're going to have their budget constraints. It can be a requirement that they want that as part of it, or it can even be set up that they're asking them, yeah, you can tell us what the normal engineering way is, but we want you to also provide the options of other ways we could do it. It can be just an option thing, but they have different ways they can approach it. But if they don't ask for it,
right.
then till
right.
it's right, whoever your contractor is or engineer is going to bid on the basic walls, state,
mm-hmm.
local, of, you know, bare minimum what they have.
And you could have an engineer or a landscape architect or an architect come in and suggest all these really great things without this document in existence, you know, as part of their proposal. But if there's no basis for that, they're not going to view that as being as awesome as it is. But if they are already familiar with it, they've already approved this and added it, they already know these issues exist, they already know this is important, that this is becoming new state practice.
Yeah.
Then when your proposals or your RFQs come back and they see these different components, they're going to be like, ooh, this looks really cool. This is a really cool stormwater feature that they built in there. I mean, you have to do the stormwater regardless. So why not do it in the most efficient and, you know, environmentally beneficial method possible?
And aesthetic. These are
yeah.
big swaths of land that the public is on. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Thompson has a gate around this water feature. These approaches are gardens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just, yeah. A rain garden is like a small...
in the backyard.
Rain garden is the small in-your-yard version of this kind of stuff, truthfully. But you don't... He's right. You don't have to fence them off. They look like planted landscaped areas. You know, I mean, they're an aesthetic feature as well.
What else could we change before we send it off?
Yeah, let me send me, because that's the most updated, right?
Yep.
Can you send that to me too?
Yep.
Rebecca wanted to see it as well.
I don't think it's real different.
It's Rebecca. Oh, yeah.
And we have had, just if you're new to this, we've been doing this, talking about this for a long time. We have some turnover. So we have had both Marcus Jones look at it. And we have had John looked at it too, right? I think
at some point.
Yeah, I know.
We've
at
least talked to it. And John and Marcus were the ones that are. One of them were the ones that recommended that we take this approach in the first place. So I mean, it's had some buy-in. You know, the idea has had some buy-in and some contribution from staff
right.
beyond.
Yeah. Are there any other edits before we? I guess we'd have to move it to email.
You're saying there's an upgraded, or there's some...
The one I passed around, it's just copy-edited from Jan Allen's
copy
comments.
The one you passed around. I don't think we had enough copies.
Yeah, I think I only had four or five.
Oh, okay. So it's
I can send it back out.
There's a lot more people here
Christine,
than
can you send out the,
yeah.
the version after this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we'll just vote over email?
Yeah.
Hopefully
yeah.
soon?
Yeah, and so I kind of like the way it is. A cover letter and then the policy statement. Do you
yeah.
want to still do it that way, just a two-page?
I think this context is super critical to
okay.
getting it bought in.
I could also remove the comment about, I say somewhere, like a comparison between low-impact development versus green infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And green infrastructure
it's
is kind of a...
last page.
Yeah, it's kind of a discrete thing that you build, like it's a capital improvement project in and of itself, Whereas low impact development is an approach. You know, everything from site selection to the very end of the project, how you finish it. Green infrastructure is just, hey, let's put a stormwater wetland here to help treat stormwater.
Oh, I see.
Where's that? That's the appendix.
Yeah,
that's
I just have one of those. That was just a, so.
We'll make sure the appendix gets sent around, too.
So I guess I could, do you want me to, what I'm saying is, do you want me to also just remove that part about the green infrastructure confusion?
Why don't we send the full thing around and then let everybody decide and they can vote or they can say whether they want to include that or not. And then.
Cool. That sounds good.
Okay.
Maybe we can do a yes with appendix, yes without appendix, and then just a no. And then, well, that, can we do that? Can we, or do we have to vote yes or no, period?
Sorry, what? What is the question?
I'm totally confused.
If we send it around with the appendix, people can say, yes, we want to present this to the
county
commissioners,
vote?
But without the appendix.
Ah.
Or we can say, we want to present to the county commissioners with the appendix.
I think we could decide that right now.
Well, I don't think everybody has a copy of the appendix.
My opinion is just to leave off the green infrastructure thing. And if anyone has any question, I could just explain it right now.
Can you do that?
Explain green infrastructure?
Yeah, so we can make a quick decision.
Yeah, so I've... Where is the document?
Oh. Here.
There's the appendix. And let me see the front page.
Yes, here.
Look. Yep. So where do I say it?
I don't think you say it in the letter. I think it's all in the appendix.
Right before the bullet points. Yep. An LID approach to site development does not have to include large, expensive structural measures, see LID versus GSI discussion below, but should consider the whole process, leveraging conservation practices, yada, yada, yada. So I'm suggesting that I just take out what's in parentheses there. And the point of having that in that sentence was people have this idea about, they might know a little bit about stormwater management and green infrastructure, and they kind of lump them together. But I was trying to separate it and say LID is an approach to design for a whole site, a holistic idea. Green infrastructure, neither of these are bad. It's just green infrastructure is a specific thing. It is a, we're gonna take this pond and turn it into a stormwater wetland. So it's like when you think of green stormwater infrastructure, you think of a $400,000 grant to do a bunch of grading and do something just for stormwater. Whereas LID is everything from, I keep saying site selection, just because that's something that doesn't involve any design. It's just a decision that's made by, you know, people with money, the commissioners. So my suggestion is that we don't include the appendix that explains the difference between LID and GSI, and then I just remove that part with parentheses that says, see LID versus GSI.
I agree. I think it's simpler and more understandable.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely.
Stick to LID.
Yeah.
LID. And that whole sentence is saying LID is a holistic approach. Yeah.
And then just tweak the first letter so it's towards the BOC. But yeah.
Cool. Okay, so I'll make those very small edits, and I will send out a 2-page document for us to vote on. Cool. Y'all to vote on.
That's right.
And I think.
Thanks.
And I'll spell my name right. I only have one L in Phil. I guess I did that.
And yeah, so this all came out of just a discussion around this committee about topics of interest to the members in the committee. Obviously, this is an issue of knowledge for them and interest, so that's what led to this. So if we do have time next time to talk about and have a just open discussion about topics of interest, and we can start doing more stuff like this.
I'd like to thank you guys again, because this was a huge amount of work.
He did.
And this is probably one of the biggest things that's going to ever come out of this committee, as far as I can see. I mean, this is really a generational thing.
I would second that.
Thank you. And thanks
for
being here today.
You're welcome. It wasn't that hard. Chris and I do this, like, for work all the time, so it's not a big deal.
Well, it was on and above, and it's a great effort and a great product. I think an example to the other counties in the state, too.
Exactly. Like, this is going to show up on Google searches when, you know, a less affluent county looks up, how do I put an RFP together? We're in Madison County. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And they see that.
From Henderson County.
Yeah, take
county.
It. Copy it, Madison County.
Exactly. A very comparable county as opposed
Lester's
to
Lester's not Madison
county,
is it?
No, it's
Okay.
So would this
I
be something?
I should be happy because we're upstream. Yeah,
exactly. Would this be something we want to have done prior to the October 16th date, like with the other letter that we're trying to aim before that date?
I think it's up to y'all.
I think we can do that, right?
Yeah.
It's up to
yeah.
Well,
yeah, but
just having it voted to present to them
over email.
I think we could handle that.
Cool. I can make these changes today. It's not a big deal.
Perfect. Awesome.
We can all commit to reading our email and voting on it in the next.
So I'll send it to you, and you'll facilitate that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll also be on the lookout for the draft of the award criteria and stuff. Let's get that from Steven, too. So we'll get maybe both of those done by October 16th. Cool. Anything else before we adjourn?
Phil, I'd like for you to be ad hoc on this committee and just keep coming. This is good work.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, y'all. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dan.
You're
good
welcome.
Job.
Right?
Yeah.
Hang in there.
Yeah, you did.